Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And we can use all the help. So I'm going to start using the lock phrase. We need to make an appeal to heaven. And so let's just, we'll move forward with that. And we've got Tammy back. So welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
And so we're covering the Kentucky-Virginia resolutions as well as the after documents. So it's a total of five documents, folks. And we just dove into the first one last week. And we're in the, and actually we didn't cover the whole document. And so we will, I think we did cover the whole document last time, didn't we?
I think we did.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay. So hopefully, because I don't mean to skim over this stuff, folks, but you can find these documents on my academic source document page. What that means is if you go to Reclaiming the Republic, there's a button, a few buttons down that I just added. And so I've kind of cleaned up the website. I'm not done, but if you go to the academic source documents, you'll start finding all of the documents there. And that way, you can actually pull these things in. And what I'm going to do, because I'm working with a team of, I'll just say, patriot leaders in different states, where we're actually reading every line of these documents. You folks need to read these. I don't want you to take my word for it. I don't want to be the spokesperson, you know, that has to travel to every all the states and all the cities all at once. I can't do it. When people really start understanding what we can do and the power that we have, they're going to want to hear people kind of explain this stuff. In other words, there's going to be a huge demand for statesmen again. America had a lot of statesmen. There wasn't just one. They didn't just pull, you know, Thomas Jefferson in every direction. There were lots of these men that understood these principles. When you look at the ratification debates and you see all of those people that were supporting and clarifying the Constitution, all of those were statesmen. Those who were opposing the Constitution were statesmen as well. They may have had their ulterior motives. They may have been supporting, you know, nefarious things, but you know, you have good statesmen and you have bad statesmen. Are those who are trying to do good, those who were not. And so what we want to do is we want to train the trainers, because that's all you really are as a statesman. You're helping educate people to inform them so that they can make the best decisions. This is the essence of liberty. If you've ever heard me talk about the scale of liberty and in a true state of liberty, we will inform you so that you can make the best decision. So by reading these documents, you can absolutely understand. And I believe this. Anybody that reads these five documents will walk away from being involved in the Convention of States. Will walk away from being involved in any organization that is calling for single state nullification, for any organization that is calling for you to go take your citizen back because this government is illegitimate. Because once you understand these documents will help clarify and give you a full, I'll just say again, clarity is probably the best. You'll actually have the full view of the what kind of government we have is not legitimate, because it's not based, and it was not the things that they did to do the things they're doing today, they never had the authority to do. In other words, they violated the Constitution every step of the way to do all of these things, creating corporations, going into bankruptcy, spending money on things that they couldn't spend on to create bankruptcy. We have been defrauded so many times that now is the time that if we're going to preserve liberty, I mean, we think we have liberty, but we don't. We've got to get there, and we have to start making the decisions to restore liberty, because the Constitution actually galvanizes liberty in this land. It galvanizes liberty for all people who live on this earth if they actually are a part of this Constitution, which kind of plays in with this concept of, you know, all states in the world could actually petition to become a state in the United States as long as the people and that culture embrace full liberty. There are cultures and countries and so forth, races that will not embrace giving you and supporting liberty for everybody, that everybody has to choose for themselves. And one of those cultures is the Islamic states. You know, there's hope for them, but they would have to abandon the doctrine, this false doctrine of compelling people and forcing them to live a life that they have to live in accord, because it's a theology. It is a theology. And even in Islam, they have revolutions amongst themselves because there are people that don't want to follow all of those things, or there's people that want to follow things beyond, you know, the harsh letter law that they already have. And so we won't have any of that because this heavenly inspired document preserves us from those types of things. So
yeah, there's even a quote by Thomas Jefferson about, you know, he says, I know of no safe depositor of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves, and if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion or freedom of choice, the remedy is not to take it from them but to inform their discretion by education.
There you go. And that's all. And I don't know when he said that, but if you look it up, I'm going to guess that that was post Constitution.
Yeah.
Folks, when you look at things that Thomas Jefferson said before the Constitution, it was things like the Tree of Liberty needs to be refreshed with the spilling of blood every 20 years. I don't want to say he was radical, but he didn't and couldn't at that point in time prior to the Constitution perceive a document that could actually preserve liberty. It was out of their reach when they created the Articles of Confederation because he was kind of a part of that. Before he went on his emissary, he was actually a part of that. And so I'm just trying to help you understand, folks, that you, if you read these documents, you will get straight. You will realize that the party's a big part of the problem, that the courts are a big part of the problem. This is not hyperbole. When you read these documents, it will shift your paradigm to understand that we all have a responsibility to interpose, and the governments that we institute also have that duty to interpose. And when we get into the next resolution from Virginia, those will be the words coming out of Madison's mouth. Those aren't not my words. This is not me. This isn't about GR. This is about what the framers, these two men, understood. And I've said this before. There were many people that kind of understood the Constitution. They were very supportive of it. Very few really understood it. Very few, and even Madison didn't understand it fully. I'm only saying that because I don't know him. We've never seen the context because they were living in a time where there wasn't this magnitude of evil. I don't think he knew how bad it was going to get. Only a true prophet of God would have known these things. And as a matter of fact, John the Revelator saw these things. No, one of the things he didn't see, John the Revelator never told us that they would be doing organ harvesting or human trafficking, but we knew it would be a very dark and dreadful day, the days that we live in today. So anyway, I digress. We're in the eighth resolution. We started this, but I want to kind of start it over again. And I'm going to just, you can just read the first blue red part. And okay. when you get these documents, when you pull these down, folks, you'll actually see because you're getting the same documents we're kind of using because they're highlighted in certain ways. And so when you hear that, you go, oh, okay, the blue part of Resolution 8 at the very top. Okay, all right. So go ahead and start with this first, you know, statement to the semicolon.
Okay. Resolved that a committee of conference and correspondence be appointed who shall have in charge a communicate. To communicate the preceding resolutions to the legislature of the several states.
Okay, so he's calling for the states to set up communication lines, to create these committees of conference and correspondence so that they can start communicating. This is what they did, and I said this before, this is what they did prior to actually forming Continental Congress and then ultimately declaring independence and then going into war. Everybody saw that the committees of conference and correspondence was considered a very radical thing to do because they saw that as the pivotal change amongst the colonies or amongst the independent states to move towards deciding to break away. And so this created a shock value in these other states because when they saw that, I think they used that to pick on, to say, look, they're trying to commit treason. They're trying to get us out of this Constitution. I believe the Federalists used hyperbole on their end. When I say the Federalists, I'm talking about the big government Federalists that was occupying government in 1798. So go ahead and read this next part to the red underline.
Okay. To assure them that this Commonwealth continues in the same esteem of their friendship and union which it has manifested from that moment at which a common danger first suggested a common union, that it considers union for specified national purposes and particularly to those specified in their late federal compact to be friendly to the peace, happiness, and prosperity of all the states.
Okay, so what we're looking at is he's basically trying to ensure that this is for the union. This is not something that, you know, is taking us to, you know, to dissolve the union. Go ahead and read the next part now.
That faithful to that compact, according to the plain intent and meaning in which it was understood and acceded to by the several parties, it is sincerely anxious for its preservation, that it does also believe that to take from the states all the powers of self-government and transfer them to a general and consolidated government without regard to the special delegations and reservations solemnly agreed to in that compact is not for the peace, happiness, or prosperity of these states.
Okay, so he's kind of conveying that this state really has this anxiety that what's happening is going to lead them to their demise. And he's really pointing to the importance of maintaining this compliance, that the states need to do their job. Now, he doesn't use those words. That's where it comes in with Madison. So go ahead, the next part now.
How far do you want me to go down?
Actually, go down. Just let's go down to the nullification part.
Okay. Okay, and that therefore this Commonwealth is determined, as it doubts not its co-states are, to submit to undelegated and consequently unlimited powers in no man or body of men on earth, that in cases of an abuse of the delegated powers, the members of the general government being chosen by the people, a change by the people would be constitutional, be the constitutional remedy, but where powers are assumed which have not been delegated, a nullification of the act is the rightful remedy.
There you go. Thank you. So what he basically just said is that there is a constitutional remedy. He actually mentioned that remedy before, and that was in Resolution 7, and it ended for that. It ended with that because it ended with this phrase, while those specified in the preceding resolutions call for immediate redress. In other words, to fix the problem. It's not talking about, you know, secession and leaving the union at all. It is about demanding. So the point is when these Federalists in these other states, what they do, and this is how the progressives work, folks, because you've seen this. They will pick one little thing and they will amplify that one word, like committees of conference and correspondence, and they will just absolutely zone in and say, look, this is treason. They want to basically destroy the union. They're not. There's no place anywhere in this document where Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, one, called for a convention to rewrite the Constitution or amend it. There's no place in these documents where they said, we need to submit to the court. And as a matter of fact, these documents actually prove that the court has no jurisdiction over things not delegated. We constantly surrender our sovereignty. Constantly surrender our sovereignty when we walk into a court that has no jurisdiction. It's plain and simple. You go in and you're talking about federal land that is not enumerated within the Constitution. Say, that's not your land, you know, federal government, and you're in a federal court. You've just opened yourself to come back and tell you, yes, it is. It's our land. You had no business being in that federal court. All you had to do was tell them that, sorry, this is not enumerated. You don't have jurisdiction. You can't be here. You can't have that. That is how it should have been addressed when they started doing this. But the way they did this one state at a time. So all the other states didn't see the harm that they stole all of this land from Wyoming in the 1850s or so, when the 60s, when Ulysses S. Grant chose to actually annex the Yellowstone Park and make it a national park. Where the Constitution did he have the authority to create a national park? It is not in the Constitution. Ergo, it not enumerated. He had no right to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So go ahead.
Yeah. So these states going, you know, going to court to get their land back isn't the right way to do it.
Absolutely. The states need to communicate to say, hey, we realize that they've taken our land. They have no power to regulate your land. In Article 4, Section 3, they have the power to create needful rules and regulations for the territories. Once the state becomes sovereign, all land goes to them and they have full control over it. The only parts that there is some cognizance or some control or navigational waters. Because if you have a body of water like the Mississippi that accesses the ocean, then the states on both sides of that have equal throughfare. So the federal government makes sure that the uses and the access to that by those states that are on that boundary or on along that river will share it and fairly share it. You know, it's because one state could easily, if you had a real industrious state, let's say Ohio, or let's say Missouri, or whatever the state is, because the Missouri River. But if you just go up the Mississippi and you say, okay, here you go. This state became really industrious and they created a fleet. They bought a fleet of ships so that they could literally bog down that channel to where a whole 5-6 days are, you know, taken by the state's ships where nobody can get in and out of that because they're clogging it up like cholesterol in an artery. Then the federal government should be able to come in and say, hold on here. You have to provide equal access for these other states to be able to use this water while you're using it too. And so this is how we kind of create, you know, order out of chaos. This is one of the reasons why when we started creating roads for cars, we said, hey, well, we better put a divider and make the roads wide enough to fit two cars going both ways. And then on you drive, you know, going in this direction, you drive on the right. Or whatever direction you drive on the right side. In Europe, they decided to go on the left. It doesn't matter what side, you just have to start creating order to minimize property damage, minimize harm, and so forth. And that gets back to the fundamentals of government. Government's job is to protect life and private property, thus creating order to travel on the road. And so when they start creating the roads, and or when we start paying for the roads to be built via taxes, then who's supposed to regulate it? You get to do whatever you want on the road? And so, yeah. And even though, we have failed to keep up with what we want government to do, we've got some cleanup, folks. We've got to dive in and start cleaning this up. Anyway, let's read the last part of this highlighted part. Go ahead.
Okay. That every state has a natural right in cases not within the compact to nullify of their own authority all assumptions of power by others within their limits, that without this right they would be under the dominion absolute and unlimited of whosoever might exercise this right of judgment for them, that nevertheless this commonwealth, from motives of regard and respect for its co-states, has wished to communicate with them on the subject, that with them alone it is proper to communicate, they alone being parties to the compact and solely authorized to judge in the last resort of the powers exercised under it.
All right. So you missed the Latin part, but that's okay. Because it's
casus non federis.
Right. And so that's okay. That's a legal term. And, you know, that's Thomas Jefferson being a lawyer.
Not within the compact.
Right. So something like that. So... what we have is we actually have to ensure that the powers that are being exercised are only those delegated. Okay, so now we can go down to the next redlined part, and let's read that.
Congress, being not a party, but merely the creature of the compact and subject as to its assumptions of power to the final judgment of those by whom and for whose use itself and its powers were all created and modified.
Okay. So what is Congress? What is the federal government?
They're merely a creature of the compact.
That's it. In other words, that you needed enough states, and that's why the Constitution dictated that you had to have 9 states buy into this to give the Constitution force enough states to actually help support the, via taxation, this service entity that they were creating. They wanted to make sure that they had enough buy-in to be successful, but they didn't want to make it so that it had to be unanimous. If they went back down that road, the Articles of Confederation and the problems that were within it would have actually been a part of this Constitution. You got to remember that the reason why they actually had to have this convention was because of the unanimity. They had to have everybody buy in or it just fell. And we couldn't make improvements. And Rhode Island would have held the nation hostage, or all of the states in the Union hostage, from being able to improve it and improve their government and actually make sure that we could succeed. Rhode Island was putting the Confederation in jeopardy because, bottom line, they weren't going to give the Continental Congress the power to be able to pay the debts. What would have happened if we wouldn't have paid the debts? I tell you really very simply, in 1790, the French Revolution, because our friends who were in the monarchy and so forth, we had clearly allies in France. And with Napoleon Bonaparte rising to power, and if had he realized that the United States was not paying a penny on their debt, he wouldn't have marched across Europe. He would have gotten in all of the ships. And actually, he probably would have said, hey, Britain, hey, Spain, why don't you join me? We're going to go and divide up America for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm telling you, folks, because the Constitution came to be, we actually secured our future and our preservation from the meddlings of the other world powers. I mean, look at how long it took Britain to finally subdue us, and that was by corrupting us, not by overpowering us. They knew they could not beat us in this process via war. The War of 1812 even proved that. They realized that they couldn't defeat us. It took too much projection of power. They couldn't lose that many ships. They couldn't afford to do that constantly because they realized that they too would be suffering from attrition. You know, when you're projecting force, You know, it is very difficult to do. But in modern warfare, we built up a navy to be able to do that. But anyway, we're going into break, so we will be right back after this break. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so as we were talking about the creature of the compact, it's clear that the Union was the parents. And as a matter of fact, that's the best way to correlate the relationship between the federal government and the states. That's the best way to correlate the government of the state to the counties. In other words, the counties are the parents and the state is the child. And when we look at the relationship between the people and the county, the people are the parents because we institute them. So I've kind of covered this.
Yeah, it's
hierarchy.
Interesting because this is actually taught, like it's stated in our constitutions, but it's actually understood the opposite. Everybody thinks that the state is the parent.
That is right.
The federal government is the parent.
Yes.
Or that the county is the parent.
Yeah, the big daddy of government is the parent. Or I should say the federal government is the big daddy of all of us. They're the parents for all of us. They feed us. They take care of us. No. They were only given very specific powers. So they were very limited and defined, and they could only serve us in those capacities. And we can hold them accountable to that. The same thing with the states. The counties created the states, and we can hold them accountable to that. But we have to work with the counties to get the state in line. We have to work with the states to get the federal government in line.
Yep.
And we, the people, are the foundation of liberty for the world. It's in our hands. And this is why I say that the mess and the death and all the mayhem that is being created is our fault because we have to begin holding government accountable. The blood is on our hands. We have to force our county government to actually do what it's supposed to do. If we want to have true justice in America, we have to restore common law at the county level. And in so doing, to do that, we actually have to leverage, because this is one of the things that many people just miss this. We have to use the essence of common law in restoring that governance at the county level. And the way we do that is using these citizen committees. You have to understand that one of the most sacred parts of America's culture is the power of the jury, the power of the people. They didn't come right out and say, hey, you know, if it gets really bad, you need to start forming committees and you need to use these committees to actually start petitioning your county. And then these counties will then take ownership, or the people will basically use this committee and integrate it in taking ownership of the county and in restoring your common law and everything else. But technically, we can't restore common law until we get the state to that point where we can restore it. Why? Just like we're learning here that single state nullification does not work, that we have to get a majority of the states to actually demand compliance to that creature. We have to do the same thing with the counties. We have to have enough counties in the state to demand that the creature that they created, that state government, restore all things that they, you know, have subverted, and common law is one of those. Now, when we went through the ratification debates earlier this summer, I showed you how it was very clear that the only way the law of the state could be changed from common law to civil law and these other forms of law, admiralty law, so forth, the only way that that can happen is it must be done by an amendment to the Constitution through the state legislature. If not, and the courts come along, the justices come along and say, you know, because we're corrupted by the Bar Association, we're going to do what we want to do because we now have full control over the governing of the law. We govern your law, which is how they basically assume the power of creating law. And nobody bats an eye. Clearly, mm-hmm. These things aren't enumerated. So my point is that this is where we actually, the essence of constitutional compliance has to be basically starts with us as the individual. This is why we cannot allow compromise. If we allow compromise, then the law is compromised. We have to look at any compromise as just like we do with sin. It is wrong, it is abhorrent, and it does not belong in our government. There are way too many people that are okay with the sin of government. As George Washington warned us, do not allow those things to happen. Make sure that you follow the mode of amending the Constitution to ensure that it is done, and it is done to the wishes of the people. In other words, if we want them to do these things, then we need to amend the Constitution. And thank heavens that it requires a supermajority to get there, because I don't think that there's a supermajority of anything in America. In other words, you may have 60% of the people, 60% of the states that may want gun control or may want welfare, may want these things, but if it's not 3/4, you can't have it. And this is how we start stripping these things out. This is why the state constitutions need to be changed to have that same resolve. You may want to have a 2/3 standard, so it's not so hard. But I say we want to make it hard. We should actually have a 3/4. I would tell you, I would stick to the 3/4. Now, at your county level, that can, the lower that standard is, the easier it is to ebb and flow. Oh, we, you know, want to do this, and it's easy to get that 60%, easy to get that 66%, which is 2/3. Pretty difficult to get that 76%, which is 3/4, or 75, I mean. But I was thinking of one above. But anyway, because technically with 66.6, that's basically 67, right? Anywho, go ahead and kind of read to a point where, because most of this is one sentence, and mm-hmm. it's a lot, and I would just say, go ahead and read until a point where you want to ask a question about what you're reading, because this is just a lot of stuff where he's talking about, you know, protecting ourselves from these things. Go ahead.
Okay. That if the acts before specified should stand, these conclusions would flow from them, that the general government may place any act they think proper on the list of crimes and punish it themselves, whether enumerated or not enumerated by the Constitution as cognizable by them, that they may transfer its cognizance to the President or any other person who may himself be the accuser, counsel, judge, and jury, whose suspicions may be the evidence, his order, the sentence, his officer, the executioner, and his breast the sole record of the transaction. That a very numerous and valuable description of the inhabitants of these states being, by this precedent, reduced as outlaws to the absolute dominion of one man and the barrier of the Constitution, thus swept away from us all. No ramparts now remains against the passions and the powers of a majority in Congress to protect from alike exportation or other more grievous punishment. Wow, this is like the longest sentence in the world. Or other more grievous punishment, the minority of the same body, the legislature, judges, governors, and counselors of the states, nor their other peaceable inhabitants who may venture to reclaim the constitutional rights and liberties of the states and people, or who for other causes, good or bad, may be obnoxious to the views or marked by the suspicions of the president, or be thought dangerous to his or their election, or other interests, public or personal.
Okay, you can stop there.
Pause there.
You got a semicolon. So
yeah.
That's the first. And actually, you started off with a colon in front. So in other words, mm-hmm. you didn't start off at the beginning of the sentence. But anyway,
right.
yeah, and with a semicolon, it carries on. I think it goes all the way to the end. There is no ending. This is one sentence.
The longest sentence.
But anyway, let's look at what he's talking about. He's actually talking about how this will go to a point where you actually have consolidated the control into one hand or into one person or into one body. Now, in some ways, that when we look at our form of government, it's supposed to be Republican. It's supposed to be by representation of we the people and the governments we institute. Those things keep that service government in check with this bicameral legislation. But instead, the federal government has basically kind of gone down this path of allowing all three to equally be tyrannical. The one that has the final say that they've kind of all hoodwinked is SCOTUS. In other words, SCOTUS can always, you know, pop their bubble, you know, the Congress's bubble or the president's bubble to say, but it's not easy for SCOTUS to do that. And what I mean by that is let's just say Biden, because Biden did crap and he did a lot of crap, just like Obama did. And the only way the SCOTUS could actually have engaged with the crap that Biden was doing was through a lawsuit that would end up coming to them. In other words, SCOTUS can't run across, you know, the streets and actually SCOTUS is pretty close to the White House. At least it used to be. So where SCOTUS resides, they're kind of closer to the White House than they are to Congress. So if the president was creating, you know, an executive order, was in the midst of signing it, and all nine judges ran from SCOTUS over there, and they basically, you know, busted through the gate of the White House, busted through the door, busted into the room where there's all this photo op and the video and Biden, you know, bird dog and what have you, and signing, you know, with multiple different pens, this executive order, and they said, stop, you're violating the Constitution. They really can't do that. They have to wait for it to come to them in a case to where they can slap his hands, strike him down, say what he just did was wrong. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
They're a passive entity. And as a matter of fact, they can't actually, this whole concept of them to be able to cherry pick things out from, you know, this appeals process is absolutely wrong. They can cherry pick appeals that are within their jurisdiction, but they can't reach down to say, just because an inferior court, a federal court, violated the jurisdiction, what they should be doing is they should actually go to the inferior court and say, hey, that is not something that arises under this Constitution. This federal land that you're playing around with in the Western side, you shouldn't even have had that in your hands. We basically remand that back to the states. That's what they should be doing every time. But instead, they grab them, they pull them up, and they use them for opportunities to basically pervert and subvert our Constitution. Roe v. Wade. You know, I listen to people all the time. I see, even like law shows, I hear people talk about Roe v. Wade settled the right of abortion. No, it didn't. Roe v. Wade was about a person's privacy, a woman's privacy, when she went into a public institution like an abortion clinic. They were saying, hey, you don't have the right to, you know, kill babies there. Well, and actually they were going after what was happening by actually attacking one particular person. With Roe v. Wade, the argument was, and the decision by the court was, that a person had the reasonable expectation when it comes to their health care, whether it's public or not. But technically, what they said was the privacy emanates from penumbras within the Constitution. In other words, that was fancy language to say, deep in the shadows of an eclipse of the sun, we can find that we see privacy as essential by the Constitution. Ergo, we are going to extend privacy rights to these people. There's no mention of privacy in the Constitution. You have a right to be secure in your person, in your effects, and your things. But when you go into public, because how many times do we see the government talks out of both sides of their mouth? Oh, you put your trash out on the street, it's now in the public domain. Well, if that's not your trash can, and even though it's going to, you know, some municipal trash, right, because that's not a private trash collection, that's a public trash collection, then pretty much you're giving over to the public your trash. So they make this ruling that, okay, even though you're supposed to be secure in your things, I'm telling you, folks, that even those things are really walking a thin line when it comes to government being able to grab things without a warrant. They should not be pursuing anything that you have, regardless of where it is. And the open field doctrine is another way that they attack these types of rights. I don't want to, you know, go down this rat hole too long, but my point is that we have to hold government to those very defined enumerations, which is why the courts should actually not even be doing many of the things that they do, which is why the president should not be doing many of the things. They can't create executive orders to make law. They can't cherry pick how they want to define the law. That comes from the Constitution. At least all laws that are in pursuant to the Constitution have to be basic derivatives, have to be based and derived from the Constitution and those firm, solid definitions that were provided during the ratification base, and that's it. This is why we covered these documents with the cod fishery bounties and the Assumption Act and the Bank Act, or the bank debates and so forth, how Madison kept on consistently saying that when they were creating a law, when they were going to engage in doing something, they had to abide by the ratification debates, because that's how the states understood it. However, because they were in this little private theater where they could create theatrics and basically start, you know, creating personas of the government that they weren't supposed to have, and get away with it because the states didn't have, in real time, the understanding of what was happening.
Yeah. Yep.
They did. We have that ability today, which is why I don't think I'm being clairvoyant. I don't think I'm being, you know, a prophet or anything. I believe that had they had the technology today, they would not have empowered Congress with as much power in doing certain things. I think that they would have said, you know what? And I, as a matter of fact, I will even say this. I think the Senate would have actually been a body of the states. In other words, because we have virtual capability where the state legislature can actually vote on things and on bills, that every bill that goes through Congress, instead of actually having the Senate would actually be the state legislatures, because now they can virtually engage in those bills. In other words, we don't need to have a body corruption in the Senate. In other words, you move the Senate, the term the Senate changes to the collect, respective state legislatures, and all bills must go through and be passed by each of them. Oh, now we can see how the states can actually stop every opportunity that the federal government would try to get out of the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the federal government had this little thing called the printing press of money. So in other words, they could go and print money and they could start bribing states. And this is how they corrupted the states. This is how Britain corrupted us, by bringing money in and buying our politicians. And then because we didn't have this great oversight, it wasn't this instant oversight. You know, it took a year before people realized what the heck just happened. And actually, in some of the cases, what they did it in secret that nobody really understood when they created corporations. Had everybody known that they were creating corporations, they would have stood up and said, where do you get the authority to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they said, well, we've been doing this. And every time I've heard anybody, whether it be a professor of law or whether it be somebody that speaks to law, to say, well, we've been doing this. What's the problem now?
Yeah.
There's nothing in the Constitution that says, even if we can get away with fooling you and violating the Constitution for 20 years, it becomes legitimate. There's no clause in the Constitution that allows that to happen. It's called, what do they call that? Statute of limitations. You know, you have only so much time to engage this or it becomes law. No, that doesn't exist in the Constitution, folks. That's why Madison stated in his veto address in March 3rd, 1817, when they were trying to create the bonus bill of making improvements to highways and waterways, Madison said, even if the states allow you to do this at this time, it will always be an infraction and a violation of the Constitution. You have to get them to amend the Constitution if you want to legitimize this. So go get the amendment. He even said that's what he wanted. He wanted you guys to get an amendment so we could do this. And I believe that it was the divine hand of providence that basically galvanized, or I should say hardened, the hearts of Congress at that point in time, where they said, no, we are going to assume this one way or another. We're going to begin. We have to assume powers. We cannot go to the states every time we want to do something. It creates the wrong persona. So nobody knew about that veto statement. And then it went to Monroe, and nobody knew about his veto statement to the Department of Transportation. And then it went to Andrew Jackson, and nobody knew because nobody was paying attention.
Huh.
And that's why it is not taught in any constitutional class or any, you know, civics class. Nobody knows that we had actually had three presidents veto the footings that would have created the Department of Transportation. And all three said you had to amend the Constitution to assume that power. This is why, folks, if you've never seen that video, you need to copy that link. I don't even monetize that. That is being supported by somebody else, and I don't even think he's monetizing it. And it's really sad that last time I looked, it was maybe 600 views. That video is pretty old. I think that video goes all the way back to when I went to the Wyoming Convention in 2020. And if you watch that video at 7 minutes, we give you the academic proof that the federal government could not create the Departments of Transportation without an amendment. And if they can't do that, then how can they create the Department of Labor, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Justice, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department?
Where do they find that video?
It is on Reclaiming the Republic channel on YouTube.
Okay.
Reclaiming the Republic is, if you want to go just to reclaimingtherepublic.org, I have a button, our YouTube channel, you just click on that and it'll take you there.
Gotcha.
But
okay.
Get that link and send that out to everybody, because once people realize that the federal government has no authority to be involved in transportation, then that means that, you know, all these other things that they're doing, creating parks and everything else, if it's not in the Constitution, they can't do it. That's why that one petition 6 regarding the Department of Transportation is pivotal. It becomes a foundational petition that proves if it's not delegated, they can't do it. The same thing with petition two, that when it comes to a treaty, it has to be within their power. It has to be an enumerated power for them to create that treaty. This is why the treaty to the UN is unconstitutional. This is why the treaties with Indians within states is unconstitutional. Because that land and all things within that state are actually state under the state. The state should be governing those things. Ah.
Right.
Ah. So as we start, you know, parting these, you know, the heavens or, you know, clearing the clouds out of the sky, we start seeing clearly. We can clearly see how far they have gone. And when we look at what Thomas Jefferson is talking about here, now we understand how important it was for them, because he foresaw that this would get down this path. What he thought, it would be completely consolidated. And what's interesting is they consolidated, they shared all the powers instead of consolidating. Congress can create laws, unlimited laws. The president can create unlimited laws. And the Supreme Court can create unlimited laws, which is, means that we're being attacked in three, you know, from three different fronts.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay. So let's get back to this. I think it's, you start off with, but the citizens will soon. Go ahead.
But I was at that the friendliest, that the friendless.
Oh, yes, you're right. That's the semicolon above. Just go ahead. Let's read this all the way to the yellow highlight.
Okay.
Go ahead.
That the friendless alien has indeed been selected as the safest subject of a first experiment, but the citizen will soon follow, or rather has already followed, for already has a sedition act marked him as its prey. That these and successive acts of the same character, unless arrested at the threshold, necessarily drive these states into revolution and blood, and will furnish new
calamities
against Republican government, and new pretexts for those who wish it to be believed that man cannot be governed but by a rod of iron, that it would be a dangerous delusion were a confidence in the men of our choice to silence our fears for the safety of our rights, that confidence is everywhere the parent of despotism.
Yeah, actually, it's calumnies, but basically the same thing, against the Republic, calamities. But here he's placing context to how these things are being applied. It's not only just being applied to the, you know, the foreigners, it's already being applied to the citizens, because now you can't speak out. The Sedition Act actually keeps you from being able to speak or print of the ills of what government is doing. You cannot print or say anything unfavorable to government, which actually means that it actually is the essence of perversion, folks, because you hear me say all the time, we don't have to support government. We can actually call government out. We are obligated to support the Constitution. We don't support the president. We support the president as long as he's in compliance to the Constitution. The day he steps and compromises, the day Congress compromises, the day the court compromises the Constitution, we have to call him out. There can be no allowance for compromise. None. I'm sorry, folks, that the letter of the law is our king. If we allow the letter to be pretended, then our government will become our king, and there will be no limits to what they can do. Perfect ending of time. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to get Tammy to make any other comments and so forth. So forgive me, Tammy. We will be back tomorrow. We'll pick it up where we left off with this free government line. We'll be back. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.